Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public service professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Richard Boykin, Amisha Cross, Teo Hardiman, and Richard Kling. Our program tonight coming from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. And if you'd like to send me a tweet, it's @Dumo, @DUMO. And we would be also remiss if we did not remind you that we're live on the Internet on beyondthebeltway.com and also on YouTube. Each and every Sunday night, you can see and hear the full two-hour broadcast. And so it's nice to have you with us. Obviously, the focus of this week's program is the actions in Baltimore last week, the rioting that took place in the streets, and also the controversial indictment of six police officers from Baltimore City. We will talk about all of that as the program unfolds this evening. We'll also hear from a noted Chicago defense attorney who will talk about the difficulty of prosecuting a police officer for alleged wrongdoing. That'll be part of our discussion. We're very interested in your phone calls tonight, 1-800-723-8289, and especially if you are a law enforcement officer listening to this program. You know, whenever we do discussions about this after these incidents, police departments, they clam up. They don't make anybody ever available to appear on programs. So, again, it is the anonymity of a phone caller who is a law enforcement officer. If you want to join in on this discussion, we are most anxious to hear your perspective of what transpired and also maybe the morale problem that surrounds the indictment of the six police officers in Baltimore. But I would like to begin with a political question, and we have all politically interested people as a guest in this program. And Richard Boykin, I want to start with you. You're a county commissioner, a former chief of staff for Congressman Danny Davis. In 2008, when America joined many, even Republicans, to elect Barack Obama as the first African-American president, they were responding to an appeal, or at least something that they felt was that this was going to be a transformative period in American history when race relations were either going to be moved to the sidelines or they weren't going to be the focal point. What happened to America and what happened to the dream that Barack Obama had in 2008 that many Americans, many white voters bought into?
I think, Bruce, that what has happened is that the policies haven't been there to bring people together. I mean, I think that the election of President Obama was a great thing for the nation, something that was historic. But at rock bottom, when you look at everything from unemployment, when you look at the wealth gap, when you look at all of these indicators about life, I mean, African Americans continue to struggle. When you look at poverty, I mean, the poverty rate is 15%, but among African Americans is 30%. I mean, and unemployment among black teens across the country is the highest. I mean, here in Chicago, it's 90% among black teenage males.
Teo Hardiman also joins us. You spent most of your adult life in anti-violence programs, and we'll talk about that as the program unfolds. But what is your answer to the question? The hope that American voters had, not just white voters. I mean, a lot of voters had hope that Barack Obama would be able to make things better. And I don't think they're better. They may be worse.
Well, Barack Obama was meant to be the Messiah, but I just want to, the reason I use the word Messiah is because that's what people may have thought he could have been. But you know, Barack Obama's hands were tied as well with the GOP. They served as obstructionists with a lot of Barack Obama's policies. Things should have gotten a little bit better with Barack Obama. But at the same time, like Commissioner Boykin was saying, unemployment right in Chicago right now for African-American teenagers is 90% between ages of 16 and 19. We have a lot of systemic issues in the African-American community, and not just the African-American community. You got a lot of homes and foreclosures in the state of Illinois, white people, black people, and Hispanic people.
Amisha Cross also joins us. Amisha, with the City Colleges of Chicago, also once upon a time active with the Democratic Party in a big, big way, working with Barack Obama on Obamacare primarily. But my question to you, and I would slightly change the question, would Barack Obama going to Baltimore have made any difference? Should he have been there? Should he be going there now?
No. I don't think that he should have been there. I think that it would have served somewhat of a symbolism, but it doesn't change anything there. At the end of the day, if you're going to allude to there being a post-racial society just because we have a black president or because we elected a black president, I think that that's problematic. And I think it's problematic because, as we all know, politics is local. One of our presidents who probably did the most in terms of legislation for black people was not Barack Obama, but Lyndon Baines Johnson. And what we also know is how hard it was for him to even see those things enacted on the state and local level. The federal government had to step in several times, even after legislation was passed federally.
You talked about the symbolism of the president going there. Would the symbolism have quelled the riot in any way?
The symbolism would have done the exact same as the symbolism did for his first election process. We heard that we wanted to have a black, we didn't want to have a black separate America or a white separate America. We wanted to have a United States of America. Symbolism is great. Symbolism doesn't solve problems.
I would disagree slightly with Amisha. I think that the president should go to Baltimore, and I think he should have gone to Baltimore. I think his presence.
And I said, by the way, on this program, because you were a guest. This goes back 3 years ago when the epidemic of violence was occurring in this city. I said that he should come home to Chicago and speak out against it, and he did, and he didn't do that.
Yeah.
The first lady came many, many months later, but I thought he was late to the call.
Absolutely. So I think going to Baltimore would have been important. I think it would have been important symbolism. That's why you have the bully pulpit. You have to use it. He should have gone to Ferguson. He sent Attorney General Eric Holder. I mean, he should have gone himself.
Right.
I mean, there have been too many instances across the country where, I mean, black people feel like they're under assault by the police. They feel like that all around the country.
Symbolism doesn't leverage injustice, right. And it never has.
But what message? I guess the question was, if the president did go, or he still goes, although the focus is off and he sort of missed the opportunity, what would he say to residents of Baltimore?
Well, this is the thing. President Barack Obama is in a position to make sweeping changes and new policies here and introduce them here in America because Walter Scott in South Carolina, he was executed by the police officer. Freddie Gray in Baltimore. These are just like individuals, but it's a bigger problem. It's a much bigger problem. What people don't understand, you have a professor out of New York by the name of George Kelling. He has a broken window theory. You have Professor David Kennedy with the David Kennedy approach. And their sole approach is to harass people and designate these areas as high crime areas, which gives the police the permission to go in and harass poor people, lock them up for looking suspicious, lock them up for jaywalking. It's all this, you can look it up on the internet.
But didn't that work for Mayor Giuliani in New York?
Yeah, it worked for Mayor Giuliani in New York, but you don't know to what cost, the collateral damage, all the people that were locked up for low-level crimes that end up getting lost in the system. We incarcerate over 2.1 million people in America right now.
And that was also the time where Amadou Diallo was shot by the police more than 20 times. I mean, and I'll also say this. I think the president should have gone to Baltimore. I think he should have gone to Ferguson. And he's got to have an urban agenda. There is no urban agenda. There has not been an agenda for the cities for the last 20 years.
Our phone number is 1-800-723-8029. We're talking about the incidents in Baltimore and what transpired there. And most importantly, is there anything that can be done or what should be done to alleviate some of the unrest that's there and also some of the frustration that exists in the African-American communities all over the United States. Back shortly from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289. We're now going to sort of move from the symbolism to maybe the substance of what can happen. And it seems that, you know, there are issues of education. There's poverty. There's jobs. There's lack of family stability. Where would you put the biggest blame, Teal? And by the way, you should mention, you have worked with street intercepting violence for a long, long time. Where do you start? Isn't the family more important than any of the other factors?
The family is very much, you know, important, but at the same time, you have a systemic issue. Police officers have to be retrained across America. We need new policies as far as policing in the African-American community, because if it was not for the invention of the social media, cell phones, we wouldn't capture a lot of these excessive force cases and police brutality incidents. That's the reality right there. Police brutality has been going on for at least 100 years. This is nothing new. We're just capturing it. We're videotaping it now.
I would say this, and I agree with what some of TL said, but I would say, look, it begins at home. I mean, we gotta have a home that's stable, but then it grows out from the home. I think the faith-based community has a lot of responsibility on their hands as well. I think that policies that leaders make or don't make has a lot to do with family stability. I mean, in these high crime areas, in these high poverty areas, high unemployment areas, people, I mean, many of these mothers who are single, they're working two jobs just to make ends meet. They don't have a whole lot of time that they're spending with the kids. And so somebody else is raising those kids. And that is the gangs. That is they're listening to peer pressure and that sort of thing. So we got to have leaders, though, who are willing to step forward and say, we can't wait. This is an urgent issue. Not only is this an urgent issue of, I wish people would get just as emotional about when blacks kill other blacks. I mean, we've had too much black-on-black crime where folks have been gunned down. I mean, just last weekend we had 22 people shot in Chicago, 4 people
but
killed.
But, Richard, it leads the news in Chicago 4 out of 5 nights. And one of the things that police will say is the black community does not cooperate with the police department to try to solve these problems. Amisha, you come from the neighborhoods. You hear that, you know the talk.
I think that there's a lot to be said about that. My father is actually a police officer. One of the things that is a major problem within the black community as it relates to black-on-black violence is that there is that code of silence. People know, oftentimes, community members know who the people are who are acting up and doing things that they shouldn't be doing in the community.
So there's a code of, and if something goes wrong, there's a code of silence on the police department as well.
Yes, indeed.
Right.
So the code of silence exists on both sides.
But I do want to go back to your first question. I think that obviously family is foundational. But if the argument is, you know, which things are going to be the most integral or which things are determining factors in violence or whether young people are going to be more prone to commit it, I think that there is also looking at all of the things that contribute to the family and the household. So employment factors do matter.
One of the key pieces or images of this past week was a mother in Baltimore who decided to do something about her son. And her name is Tanya Graham. We're not going to show the video. But she went and she slapped him upside the head about 10 or 15 times. Now, again, I've heard criticism on social media that the white media overplayed that video as, yes, by golly, that's a black mother going and doing her thing. Although this is a black single mother of 6. Right, she went in. But as African-Americans, and again, for those listening on radio, all of our guests this evening are African-American. What did you see when you saw that picture, Tio?
I thought it was a good move. Tanya, obviously, she did not raise her son to stand out there and throw rocks at the police. And she stepped up to the occasion. I'll tell you something. If she would have been captured beating him up somewhere else other than the riot situation,
right,
she may have been arrested.
And I understand that the Baltimore DCFS has actually opened up an investigation against her for disciplining her son in this manner.
Exactly.
And so I think what we have here, Bruce.
But how did you see it? How did you see it?
I saw it as a mother doing what she had to do. Look, when I was coming up, they disciplined you on the spot. So if I acted out in the store, guess what? I got it in the store.
Yeah.
I mean, if I acted out at school, I got it at school
Alicia,
in front of everybody
else. You told that
else.
Story once on
yes,
this program
Yes, I was
going to
say, I'm probably the youngest
you and
person
brothers.
Here. And me and my brothers, if we acted up, my mom, there was no wait until you're not in public. You're just going to get it right here because you knew better. I trained you better. Right. I think that one of the arguments that African Americans have against the media in terms of overplaying this is that the way that black mothers specifically teach, train, and discipline their kids is always under a very watchful eye by white America. So when you're usually thrown under when it comes to the way you discipline your child or for giving them spankings or for, you know, giving them any level of corporal punishment, it seems a little bit odd that now everybody is standing back hand clapping when a few months ago it wouldn't have mattered who you are, what the situation was. As a black mother, it's just wrong for you to do that.
But again, was she doing the right thing? I mean, should
my question would be,
was the crime here that she got caught doing it? Because what I'm hearing, and again, not just with this group, but again, in the African Americans that I've known throughout my life, they each have told a story where in their house, as well as in my house, if you did something wrong, you got slapped. Now, that's a different generation. We're different generations here this evening, and certainly
not Amisha. She's a millennial. She's a millennial.
But again, is it a generational issue? Because if that happened in white suburbia, as you say, DCF
right.
would
everybody
be called.
Get involved. But put it like this: what the mother did is she knows that her son was raised the proper way by her. She's doing the best she can. So the reality of it is that, like Commissioner said, when I grew up, you know, we get hit on the spot. If I did something wrong, I get slapped to my head in front of everybody. And so it's the norm. And one thing about her son respected her to the utmost, because a lot of teenagers wouldn't even accept that, especially right. in the public. So I have to give her credit, and I give her son credit, too, for just standing back, you know, stepping back.
Where do we go? Going back to what are the next steps? There's going to be commissions. There's going to be investigations. There'll be all kinds of stories. You know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, a year from now, they're going to say, what happened? You know, let's look at Baltimore. What are we going to see? Is there going to be a huge influx of dollars? Is it just dollars? Because a lot of money. I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars have gone into Baltimore
right.
already.
But I think
Baltimore was being held up as a city that was coming back because of all that.
But I think, look, policies and leadership. Look, you got to have an agenda for the cities.
What was the leadership? I mean, in Baltimore. I mean, there's been criticism of the current mayor, and a former mayor and former governor wants to be president of the United States. I mean, there's some culpability to those people who have been in charge.
Here's what I'll tell
you. And even Elijah Cummings. I mean, how long has he been in Congress? Has he made life better or worse for the people in Baltimore?
Bruce, what there's been is a race to incarcerate. There's been a mass incarceration of African Americans throughout the years. And so when Governor O'Malley was the mayor of Baltimore, there was a get tough on crime mentality,
right.
just like it was in New York. And now you're seeing the results of that. Exactly. You got 2.1 million people in prisons around the country today.
Okay.
But many of them, they're on minor drug offenses.
I totally agree. And you know, it's one of my pet topics. But here's my question. The people we're talking about tonight are not the people who were rioting in Baltimore. Those people that you're talking about, they are incarcerated.
No,
they're
there's some
away.
Of them. There's some of
some
them.
Some of them have gotten out.
Right. And I think what you see, though,
so
Bruce, is
when
is
they get out, then they have no job.
Well, part of it's also because you see, and we've seen an influx over the past decade. Baltimore has been one of the top cities in terms of influxes of federal dollars. But those federal dollars have not trickled down to economic development for the communities themselves of color. When you have families that are earning 13K or less a year,
what about the church that got burned down? I don't think that was federal funds. The church that was burned, the new church that had just been built for African-American senior citizens, the minister was on almost with tears in his eyes, right. you know, the night he was on television.
I mean, I don't think
that was
be...
not federal funds. But again, that was something being built with outside dollars. There might have been some federal dollars involved, but I doubt because it was a church.
Right.
But here's philanthropic dollars going into building a church for African-American senior citizens in West Baltimore. and that place gets torched. Well, who threw that? Who lit that match?
Well, the thing in a situation where it's very chaotic, like a riot condition, people are not thinking. You know, no matter who lit the match or whatever and burnt the church, they should not have burnt the church down or the CVS pharmacy. I want to make that clear.
Right.
But people are not in the right frame of mind. It's like a pack mentality. You're going to follow the pack. And that's what happened. And quickly, I want to say this. When it comes down to resources that are being placed in communities, you have to hold your local elected officials accountable, because they know where that money is going. They should know where it's going. And once again, not to just keep on hyping the commissioner, but just what you said, I do agree with you. You need an agenda for every city. If you don't have an agenda, the money's going to go all kinds of places.
How do you go about it? Because you deal with young people and people in trouble.
Right.
What prompts someone to take advantage of a situation and begin to burn and loot and riot? Because we've talked about what happened in Baltimore. The same thing happens if there's ever a sports victory in Detroit, right, or the west side of Chicago frequently if the Bulls win. I mean, certainly Oakland is another city that, you know, wherever there is a celebration, there are thugs. And I will use the term thugs, and I know it's a loaded word, but I'll
use
it.
You know, I've never used that word, Bruce. Well, I wouldn't even go there when you asked me to on the last show.
But my point is, there are certain thugs that take advantage of a situation. How do you root them out? Well, are you never going to change their mind?
You're not going to root those type of people out. And I wouldn't call them thugs, but I want to say it's Hurricane Katrina. Some guys took advantage of that situation as well. Now, what happens is that people spread the wrong message in people's minds. I just want to go back to 1994 for a minute. Rwanda, for example. You had over 900,000 people killed within a three-month period of time because people had spread the wrong information in other people's minds, and they went and tried to exterminate other people. So things just happen. It's not right, but you have to have local leaders that had a respect to the young guys, so the young guys will listen to them, but that takes a lot of work, you know, behind-the-scenes work.
Amisha.
You can go to Tiananmen Square. You can go to the Arab Spring. All over the world, we've seen uprisings where young people are out there rioting and looting. It happens. But I do think, not to say that it's not intense and that it shouldn't happen. I call them thugs myself, to be honest. But I do think that you have to take into consideration the level of frustration that these individuals feel when they've gone through and they've worked things out and there's never been any change.
We got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, a legal perspective of what's happening in Baltimore.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
From Tindley Park, Illinois to Toluca Lake, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, coast to coast and border to border, and live every Sunday night on BeyondTheBeltway.com, a live audio and video stream of this broadcast. Joining us around the table this week, three great guests, and they will introduce themselves now, beginning with Richard Boykin.
Bruce, thank you for having me on the show again. Richard Boykin, Cook County Commissioner, District 1 here in Illinois, previous Chief of Staff to Congressman Danny Davis, and a partner at Barnes & Thornburg Law Firm.
Teo Hardeman.
Yeah, once again, I'd like to thank you also, Bruce, for having me on the show. I'm Teo Hardeman, a candidate for Congress against Bobby Rush in the 1st Congressional District and President of Violence Interrupters Incorporated.
Amisha Cross.
Amisha Cross, National Director of Diversity and Outreach for the Young Democrats of America, Communications Director for Caldwell Strategic Consulting, a political consulting firm out of D.C., and the PR Director for City Colleges of Chicago, the largest institution serving African Americans.
Good. And the former
Miss Black Bobby. Illinois.
Okay, right. Well, thank you very much. Joining us now to talk about the legal aspect of this case, we welcome Richard Kling. Richard Kling is a noted defense attorney. He's also a professor of law at IIT, Kent College of Law. Richard, thank you very much for joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
My pleasure. Good evening. Nice to talk to you.
I would like to begin by getting your assessment of the decision by Ms. Mosby, the state's attorney in Baltimore County, to indict police officers, the six police officers involved, according to her, in this situation involving Freddie Gray. Were you surprised that the indictment came down so quickly?
I was surprised that it came down so quickly, absolutely. It was extraordinarily quickly after the incident occurred.
Now, Alan Dershowitz, the noted Harvard defense lawyer, he has said that, in his opinion, this was done for political reasons. It was done for crowd control reasons. It was done to sort of damper and raise lower the blood pressure of everyone in Baltimore. Would you agree with that?
You know, I'm not privy to the medical examiner's report that the state's attorney saw, the prosecutor saw. I'm not privy to police reports. Do I think the speed was to help quell the crowd? Absolutely. However, I have to give credit enough to the state's attorney and to the mayor and to the police authorities who investigated to conclude that they indicted because there was probable cause to indict, not because they just wanted to do crowd control.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, we should mention that one of the most severe of these charges, by the way, the three officers involved, three African-American, three white officers, including a lieutenant with 17 years experience. That's a bomb. That was part of the bombshell arrests that were announced by Ms. Mosby. But one of the charges, the most severe, was against Caesar Goodson, and he is the driver of the van, which went allegedly on a rough ride, which, again, is a term for, again, used, I guess, maybe in police offices or stations around the country, but I guess it's noted in Baltimore that you put someone in a police car or a van and you give them literally a rough ride, and in this particular case, he drove around for 45 minutes. Is the term rough ride, are you familiar with that term?
I haven't heard it in the Chicago area. It doesn't surprise me. And realistically, this kid was handcuffed and foot cuffed and left on a floor in a van. And any ride in a police van under those circumstances would be extraordinarily rough.
Now, Officer Caesar Goodson, he was the driver of the van. The most severe charges were leveled against him: involuntary manslaughter, second degree, depraved head murder. Heard murder. What does that mean? Depraved heart, rather. I'm sorry. What is depraved heart murder?
Second degree murder in Maryland means that you didn't premeditate it, you didn't anticipate it, but that you clearly intended the consequences. And so intent is one of the elements of second degree murder in Maryland. In terms of voluntary manslaughter, those are the type of heat of passion cases where you don't intend to kill anybody, you don't think about killing anybody, but you get involved in an argument which gets out of control. So what the state's attorney charged him with is intending to kill, although not premeditatedly, but certainly intending or knowing the strong probability of death or great bodily harm.
How does one go about proving that, Richard?
Well, that's going to be obviously the question of the day. Realistically, to charge is a lower standard of proof than to prove it. She's going to have to prove to a trier of fact, judge or jury, beyond a reasonable doubt, that he, number one, was responsible for the death, and apparently the medical examiner has come to the conclusion that it had to be with a severed spine. One of the issues is going to be whether his spine was severed before he was thrown into the van or after. Certainly there are going to be issues with respect to proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, one of the stories that came out this week was that he might have been banging his head against the wall of the van. And yet, in a discussion I've had with a friend who's in the medical field, he just said that you cannot sever your spine with any action that you do to yourself. Then I mean, there has to have been some violent activity on someone. Would you?
That's absolutely. You can crack your head against the wall and maybe cause blunt trauma to your head, but you can't sever your spine. I mean, that's a medical impossibility.
Right. By the way, one of the religious leaders in the city, because, again, the curfew was lifted, in Baltimore, it's been lifted. And, again, there were peace rallies that were held today. Most of them were without violence or activity. But one of the leaders, Reverend James Bryant, had this to say. This was about the indictments that came down, and there was a discernible reduction in tension when these indictments were announced. He said, quote, "This is a festival for all of Baltimore. We're standing together. He said the people of Baltimore were declaring victory. That's his quote. Declaring victory over police brutality, a corrupt police department, and racial profiling. Do you think, and I'm asking my guests around the table right now, Richard Boykin, do you think that you can declare victory just by indicting police officers without the due process that they deserve and the presumed innocence that they should have, even though that certainly wasn't the message delivered by the state's attorney, Mosby?
First, let me thank Dr. Kling for being on, and let me say to him that I appreciate hearing him and his thoughts about this case. I don't think that you can declare victory. I think that the people have a sense of relief that, you know, the prosecutor came forth and leveled these indictments. However, I mean, the next step, of course, is getting a conviction.
Right.
And if there is no conviction, there's going to be some more rioting. The other thing is that, and we've seen this in other places like New York and Ferguson, where there wasn't an indictment. And, of course, you know, you had looting and you had rioting. The real deal is that we need wholesale criminal justice reform. It's not just the police. It's prosecutors. It's judges. It's public defenders. It's the whole criminal justice system needs to be reformed.
But in this particular case, Teal,
okay.
The crowd appears to be happy at the moment or pleased at the moment that these police officers have been charged. And there's going to be an indictment. Now, again, Richard has talked about what comes forward. If there's not going to be a conviction, and everything I've read today indicates from lawyers from all sides
right.
that this is a very tough case for the state's attorney to approve, they may come back with a not guilty verdict. And what can be done to communicate to the people of Baltimore and people all over the United States, people of color and not of color, to convince them that we do have laws, they have to be proven, and there is a presumption of innocence even for these police officers to a community that is outraged because of the way they have been treated by other police officers.
Well, you know, everybody is presumed innocent until proven guilty. I understand due process, but I'll tell you something. If those officers are not convicted, we're going to have some major problems in Baltimore. I'm not advocating no violence. We're against excessive force and police brutality. We're not anti-police, but you're going to have some serious problems. Freddie Gray was injured before he was put in a van. If you look at his condition when the officers were holding him up, something was wrong with that young man. I can't pinpoint it, but I think his spine was injured before they even put him in the van.
Richard, what's your answer to that question?
The answer to the question is, assuming it's a jury trial, it's going to be the citizens of Baltimore who decide whether or not the case is proven beyond reasonable doubt. And so the answer is, if they decide it is, they're going to convict, and if they decide it isn't, it's the citizens who are going to make that decision.
The head of the police union has said that he might seek a change of venue.
Right.
Would that be something you would recommend?
I think it's going to be difficult to get a fair trial in Baltimore, given the extensive publicity. I don't think it's going to be possible. I think it's going to take some skill on the part of the judge and the lawyers to pick a jury that will be fair. And, again, the burden is on the state to prove it. He is presumed innocent. I'm a diehard criminal defense lawyer. On the other hand, or at the same time, I marched in Washington with Dr. King when he gave the I Have a Dream speech, and I'm acutely aware of the problems in terms of racial profiling and police brutality. So, again, it's going to be up to the citizens to make that decision.
For those listening around the country, Richard Kling, you have been involved in several high-visibility cases involving, police misconduct and also high-visibility, defense cases in the city of Chicago in the world of criminal activity. Amisha, you wanted to weigh in on this.
Well, I was going to say a change of venue is interesting, and I'm not surprised that they would seek it, but you would be hard-pressed to find a place in the United States of America where people have not seen, heard, or have any personal commentary either way on this set of events. So
does there have to be a collective ongoing education of everyone, not just African Americans, everyone, how our criminal justice system works? Because we have a situation where the prosecutor in Ferguson was criticized. It took them too long, and then they came back with the verdict there. And now we have a situation where we have an African-American state's attorney, some people saying that she's rushing to judgment. But again, the point is, it isn't just the cell phone videos that convict people.
Right.
There has to be evidence. And it seems to me that everyone needs to have an ongoing course in how our criminal justice system works, because sometimes they just don't get it. Back shortly from Chicago. Richard, stay with us. I'd like to ask a few more questions. Back shortly from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Misha Cross, you wanted to make a point based on our last conversation.
Yes, I was saying that if you're talking about there being an education that needs to take place among Black America and white America in regards to law enforcement, there also needs to be the knowledge that Black America usually falls on the wrong side of that level of law enforcement. It's not a lack of understanding for a lot of Black people. It's that even when you can be doing everything right, you're still a person who just might be pulled over. You're still a person who just might have to go through that process. And no, but the, you could but be the a point professor.
There has to be, I mean, there is, I assume, is there a clear understanding that in a high visibility case like this, you have to make your case, as Richard Kling was describing, depraved heart murder. You've got to prove that Officer Goodson put him in the back of that van and deliberately drove for 45 minutes over potholed streets in Baltimore with the desire to kill Freddie Gray.
I don't think the lack of understanding comes to the proof point as much as it is a lot of the African-American public want to see some level of punishment happen for these men.
Okay. In your view, Richard, should there have been or is there or is there a lesser charge that could have been made against these officers that would have been more believable to stick so they would have been convicted of something, maybe not the reach that Ms. Mosby has gone for?
I mean, two issues. One is there could be lesser charges, and lesser charges may still come out of this process because the jury will have a decision as to what charges, if any, the officers are guilty of. But I want to make a point also, which was just made. I don't think the problem is understanding the criminal justice system. I think the problem is understanding why so many people, generally of color, are very angry, going back to Watts and Cleveland and Detroit and Ferguson and Chicago and New York and around the country. And it's because, as was said, and I'm white, so I'm not taking a position based on race. I'm taking an objective position that it usually is people who are of color who are more often stopped than Caucasians, and it's usually people of color who do fall on the other side of the criminal justice system.
I spoke with a police officer friend of mine 2 days ago. I was trying to get him to be on the program or to give me some names of people that would even appear anonymously, because you never get official police departments to talk about these issues, which is unfortunate. It's important to have a police, insofar as a media perspective, it's very difficult to have a meaningful discussion of police community relations when the police departments around the country don't ever put someone on the air to talk candidly about what the problem is. So how do you have a dialogue when they don't do that?
Or when a police union automatically comes out and essentially says no police officers could possibly be guilty of anything.
Absolutely.
That's ridiculous.
This police officer friend of mine said when we talked about it, he said exactly what was in my mind. How stupid do you have to be in the 21st century with social media and virtually every third person that you run into having a cell phone camera? How does any police officer anywhere in this country think they're going to get away with anything?
Because they grab the cell phone cameras and smash them as somebody else is taking the pictures. I think it's sort of a notion, we're the police, we have the power, we can do what we want to do. There are certainly some good police officers out there, and I wouldn't want to be a police officer, but I think police officers get in trouble or who should get in trouble are the ones where it's sort of, I'm the top, nobody can do anything to me, and I'm going to make a decision here.
Would body cameras have any bearing on future cases like this, in your opinion, Richard?
Yes, I think they would. Assuming they're turned on and not destroyed, yes, I think they would.
Mm-hmm. Now, one issue that when we get into the sort of the heart of why so many African Americans are upset with the police department is they think they're harassed.
Well, it's not just a thought. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah,
ACLU did a report on stop and frisk here in Chicago just last summer. 250,000 stops, 70% of the people stopped were African American.
Because so many African Americans are in prison, which you decry, because so many African Americans are in prison, does that perpetuate the image that when you're looking for a criminal in a high crime area, that you will look first to African Americans, Teal?
Well, it's something in the training we expect. You know, I write for the Huffington Post, and I put a post up about police brutality. There was some officers in Miami, Florida. They used African American pictures for mugshots for target practice. Some of these police officers are trained, shoot first, ask questions later. Back to Chicago briefly. We have Laquan McDonald. He was shot 16 times. The city refuses to release the videotape, okay? Because if that videotape is released, it's going to be problematic. Another young lady, Rekia Boyd, was shot in the head. Superintendent McCarthy stated that the officer was shot the right person he was aiming at. This girl was unarmed and was shot in the head, along with another guy was shot in the head.
I want to give you a follow-up on it, but Richard, thank you very much for being with us. I've got to do one more thing before we go off the air, but thank you very much. Richard Kling, professor of law at IIT, Kent College of Law, and a longtime friend. Thanks very much for being with us to offer your legal perspective. Teo, you mentioned that you're running against Bobby Rush.
Yes.
I would be remiss if I did not bring up a very sensitive subject to you personally, because there's been a lot of publicity in Chicago that you were charged with beating your wife.
Exactly.
And so my question is, what is your response to that charge? Mm-hmm. Because, again, it cost you one job with ceasefire.
Well, my wife did an article in the Chicago Sun-Times and told the truth. I never hit her. My wife acted emotionally in a situation, and we're past that. We've been together 15 years. We're still together. So people bring it up. I'm willing to deal with that. I was crucified when I ran for governor about that situation. And my wife can speak better than I can on it, but she did an article in the Sun-Times with Mary Mitchell and said it was more verbal abuse. It was no physical abuse.
And in your campaign, obviously, you're ready to address that issue again and try to put it to rest.
Well, I'll put it to rest. I've never been convicted of any crimes. You know, I'm a community organizer. I have a master's degree in inner-city studies. I know a lot of civic people. I've been around. I put a lot of work in.
You're on this program because you know a lot about the subject we're talking about. But, again, I would be remiss if I didn't ask that question.
Well, I'm good. I'm good.
For those listening to us on radio and watching us on television, we'll be back with another full hour coming up shortly. 1-800-723-8289. We have just scratched the surface of this subject. We'd look for your phone calls. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for the new Wild Travels series Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Richard Boykin, Cook County Commissioner from the County of Cook, Amisha Cross from City Colleges of Chicago, and Tia Hardiman, anti-violence community activist and president of Violent Interrupters, Inc. Our program tonight coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications. where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8029. We'll take calls in just a moment. But also, if you want to send us an email, it's btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And we have some tweets that we're going to read you at the beginning of the broadcast this evening, or the second hour of the broadcast. BC writes, 50 years of Democratic control in Detroit, Baltimore, and Chicago, and they're all bankrupt and crime is out of control. Try something new. Dumont, also from BC, Sunday morning and not one witness has come forward and said they saw a rough ride or the other prisoner didn't complain about a rough ride. And from Mac Birch, taking exception to a word I used, thug is the new N-word. Please stop using it, Bruce. Sorry, no excuses. Well, to Mac, I totally disagree with that. I think we have people around the table that do not, who are African-American, who are not offended by that word. In fact, it was the mayor of Baltimore herself who used that very term to those that put to the streets and took a peaceful demonstration and turned it into a riot. And again, if you're longtime listeners to this program, I have used the word thug to describe Valerie from Vladimir Putin. I've used it to describe some of the Italian police officers who got international notoriety in Chicago for beating the crap out of a waitress a couple of years ago. Thug to me is an action by a physically large individual who has a disregard for the people that they are surrounding. They use that physicality to act in criminal or in my view, obnoxious ways, and they use intimidation. And to me, that has no color delineation at all. It describes conduct. And I do believe I will continue to use the word thug. And Amisha, you use the word thug. So
I use the word thug.
Why do you use it?
I agree with you. I think that, and for myself, when I use it, it is always a behavior. You can be a thug and be a female. You can be a thug and be Latino. You can be a thug and be European. You can be a thug of any race.
And be a hockey player. You can be in the NFL.
Across this country and across the world. It is a behavior in which you automatically insinuate fear by your actions.
Richard, you disagree with me and with Amisha. Why do you take offense to the word?
I find it highly offensive. And I don't think it should be used. I think the word has been used to stereotype too many people who look like me, African-American, young males, and the media has done a pretty good job of doing that. And so I don't want to use the word.
But you agree with my point that there are thug police officers.
I'm not going to use the word thug. I think they're police officers who act in a bad
rogue
way.
Rogue police officers. You know, I grew up in the project, so the word thug, I never use it because I just see them as my brothers out there. They may not, carry out the right behaviors at times, but I don't see them as thugs because you have corporate thugs. And like you said, you've called Putin thug because of his behavior.
Yeah, sure.
So I wouldn't necessarily use the word. I would use the word, I just cut to the chase. I might use the word gangbangers at the time, but not thug. I mean, whatever. It just depends on how you feel about the people.
Right.
That's
anyway,
all. Right.
Let's get back to some substance again.
Right.
Richard, one of the things that I've heard African Americans talk about every time we have this discussion is they feel that they are singled out. I asked in the last hour, are they singled out because of the large number of African Americans who are in prison? What is your answer to that question?
My answer is that bad police policies have led to large numbers of African American males in particular being singled out as, you know, people who have a propensity to commit crimes. We've seen it in the ACLU report and their stop and frisk report where 250,000 people were stopped last summer, 72% of the stops were of African American males. African American males in the city of Chicago make up 32%. Well, African Americans make up 32% of the population in the city.
But if you have said, as you said earlier in the program, there's a lack of education, there's a lack of family, there's a lack of job opportunities.
Right.
Okay. If you are a person who's suffering from all of those issues and you have no job, and you're standing on the corner with 10 or 15 other people who are like information, isn't crime one of the things you think about doing? Whether you're black or white, if you want to survive and you don't have a job and you're with other young people of your color, that's why it's not exclusively about color. They have no hope. They have no job. They're hanging together. They got no place to go. And you know what? They just heard that there's an old lady that lives down the street and she's got diamonds in her basement. Does that make those people more likely or less likely to say, hey, let's go grab that diamonds from that old lady?
Look, it doesn't justify police just running up on the group of individuals standing on the street and saying, hey, get up against the car. I want to search you. There is a thing called the Constitution of the United States of America, and we all must abide by it. The Supreme Court has said that, you know, you can't stop somebody unless you have reasonable suspicion that they have committed a crime or that they're about to commit a crime.
If they have a report that the person that committed the crime from the victim is African American.
It doesn't mean, Bruce, that you stop every African American on the street.
Well,
you have to be specific.
But they don't necessarily stop every African American on the street. What I'm saying is that in this hypothetical case I'm talking about, if there's been a robbery and there's been a report that, you know, this is an 18-year-old black guy, and that's all they can say, it's an 18-year-old black guy, and you see a street corner, and there's a lot of 18-year-old black guys, is it wrong for the police to go up to those people and say, put your hands up, we're going to see if you have, if something was stolen, we want to know who you are. Is that wrong?
Well, you know, I'm not going to say it's wrong. I mean, it's police work, but it's just getting out of control. And I have a better word for you, Bruce, tonight. Opportunist opposed to thug or gangbanger. Opportunist, okay? That's what a lot of people were, in my opinion, opportunists. But the police have been wrong too many times. That's what the problem is, because the numbers don't add up. 2.1 million people locked up across the United States, 250,000 illegal stop and frisk searches, and the list goes on and on. We have issues in black America with the police, and not all police.
Getting back into over-incarceration now,
yes.
if there is a stop and a frisk, mm-hmm. and there is a crime charged, and there is someone who either pleads guilty to the crime, a judge or a jury finds someone guilty, okay? They have committed a crime, right, Richard? Regardless of how the police officers knocked on their door or stopped them on the corner, they have committed a crime. And they are now sentenced to prison. Mm-hmm. Now, you and I can discuss, and you and I think would agree, that the amount of time that someone serves for a crime is overstated. We get into mandatory minimums, you get into all kinds of stuff. But the person that is going to prison, that person has usually done a crime.
Not so, Bruce. There are a number of people behind bars right now who were tortured into confessions. There are a number of people who actually public defenders did a lousy job
I want to talk specifically about that when we come back. It's a very important point. Again, I argue that a lot of the people who are in prison deserve to be there, but again, there's extenuating circumstances. I want to follow up on that when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to South Elgin where Jim is listening to us on WCGO. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good evening, folks, how's it going?
Okay.
Good. This whole thing about Baltimore is very unfortunate. And, you know, people are always talking about how businesses don't want to come to a lot of these inner cities. And yet there was a news report today where some people were celebrating the fact that CVS burned down and more like white-owned or non-black-owned businesses should stay out of these neighborhoods. So how's that going to help anybody who wants to make have a better life and more, you know, services and products? We have the problem in Chicago.
The point is, Jim. You know what? That's a very rational question, and you're asking people when they are frustrated and when there is a riot condition or there's a frustrated condition, and the match. I don't mean the physical match. I mean the psychological match has been set. That people don't think rationally. Or they're only thinking about what they can do and take advantage of a situation. That's what I'm talking about. To me, looting is one of the worst crimes. It is one of the worst crimes. It's taking advantage of a very bad situation, whether it's a hurricane, whatever the case may be, or the death of a 25-year-old black man. You're taking advantage of a situation for your own aggrandizement. You want merchandise. You want to grab things that you can't afford to buy because you don't have a job.
And they feel like, Bruce, and I don't justify it, but they feel so hopeless, and they feel like the system is stacked against them. And this is their opportunity to get equal and get even with the system. And what they'll say is, you know, when they take those televisions, they'll say, well, they got insurance. They'll just pay for them. I'm getting even with the system. They feel a sense of unfairness.
I know that.
When you burn down a CVS that employs 50 to 60% of the people within that community, part-time minimum wage, whatever, now they have nothing.
Yeah, but they're not looking at the people who are being employed. They're looking at this big corporation.
You're now suggesting that the rioters are thinking about it.
Right.
They don't think about this. They don't think that their own grandmother may not be able to get her heart pills at CVS because there's going to be no pharmacy within 3 miles of that anymore.
I think they're not thinking about somebody's insurance.
They're thinking about their greed.
When Darion Albert was beaten to death on the south side of Chicago, the guys that were convicted for hitting him in the head with the big clubs and everything, the guy said in the Sun-Times newspaper he was not thinking. Everybody got caught up in the pack mentality. So that's what happens. People are not thinking in situations like that, and they're wrong for that. You should not burn down businesses nowhere.
And you shouldn't burn down the businesses if your sports team wins a championship.
Right.
What's that about?
Yeah, that's crazy.
What are they frustrated? When they're starting fires on the west side, if the Bulls are they don't do it because of the Blackhawks, but because of the Bulls, they're not thinking, well, you know, we're doing this because we want to get back at Jerry Reinsdorf.
No, I think it's an opportunity for them to get even. I think it's an opportunity for them to get products, things that they, you know.
It's not just getting even, Richard. They're stealing.
Yeah, I understand.
They're taking
that.
It advantage, and they are stealing, and they're not thinking. They're also not.
They don't see it as that.
They're not. Obviously, they're not.
Well, they
they're
do
not,
now
not,
since all of thinking. Their bails are, you know, close to $300,000. They know what they did.
And also, I mean, they are not. They don't think about the perpetuation of an image of a race. They don't think about that.
I think that's probably the biggest and the greatest argument out of this whole thing, because at the end of the day, if you know that there are Caucasian Americans across this great nation who have a natural fear of African Americans, specifically African American males, when you basically do things that add to that rhetoric, and they're seeing it, they're reading it in newspapers, there are live feeds of this action, you cannot, on that same token, get extremely upset when that vision is played out in real life.
Wow.
I
agree with
that. That's right on target. Can you imagine Joe and Mabel sitting in Wichita, Kansas, watching these riots? What's going through their mind?
Well, you know, it's just crazy. You know, some of the African American people have lost their minds. I mean, Officer Darren Wilson in Ferguson, he made a comment. He said Michael Brown was bulking up like the Incredible Hulk, running through bullets, okay? And I think he was suffering from the big black man complex. That's what I think Officer Darren Wilson was suffering from, because you got a lot of good white people out here, good people all across the board that love black folks, and we love white folks as well. But you got a certain segment of the population, they're ostracized. They don't know what's going on. I mean, they just don't know. I had to go to the hospital yesterday to check on a friend, and I'm African-American male. Sometimes by me being a light-skinned African-American male, I think people may not see me as that. I just want to make a quick point. They start asking me all kinds of questions like, do you have access to a computer? I'm like, come on, man, this is the 21st century. Then they were watching me out of the Elmhurst Hospital.
So crazy. So, but again, we're getting into cultural issues
right,
as
right,
well.
Right.
I mean, the whole gangster rap, the whole again, I'm going to use the word thuggery again. This whole image of thuggery mm-hmm. is based on physicality and intimidation. That is viewed by some African Americans as a plus. That's a part of their stereotype that they like.
And African American pop culture has supported it. African American pop culture has supported it. There are young kids who are, I guess, viewed as scrawny or smaller, who get made fun of because they do not fit into this image. Kids who are the stellar or outstanding students in their classroom, yes, get made fun of because they're not a part of this image. If rap and, you know, you calling people B's, H's, and everything else that you want to call them is not something that comes out of your mouth, then you're not black male enough. I think that there is something to be said about mm-hmm. a culture that, for whatever reason, has emphasized and created this rhetoric that basically says this is what it means to be a black man.
I understand where you're coming from, but some of the toughest looking brothers are some of the most nicest brothers in the universe. I know some guys that look real built like Hulk and everything, but if you go shake their hand, how you doing, sir? Everything's cool. So I think it's a misperception going on because some of the nicest people are some of the roughest looking people in some cases.
You said during the break that you know, obviously, when something like this happens, we talk about violence. We talk about education, as we've talked about. And by the way, I will just repeat something that I've said for 25 years on this program. In my view, insofar as government support, any dollar not spent on education is a diversion of government money, a diversion. You've got to have education. Education has got to be better in all areas. And without that education, you are less likely to have a job. If you don't have a job, all of the other social ills will spin out of a lack of education. And what makes you want to go to school and learn is you have to have someone who is a hero, preferably someone in your own family. That doesn't happen enough in African-American families and an increasing number of white families where there is not two parents present. But Teal, you said during the break that instead of just focusing on stopping violence and talking about guns and things of that nature, your program now, you've switched a little bit in your MO. What is it?
Well, the thing is, I'm here to tell everybody on your show today, if you don't deal with the core issue of black on black hatred in our community, I'm speaking from African American perspective, I don't care if you give a program $30 million because you're going to still have a increased homicide rate because we have too many issues with one another. It plays out in the political landscape. It plays out in the religious landscape. For example, you don't see no white pastors. You don't see no Hispanic pastors jumping up talking about who they're going to endorse for mayor. You don't see that. All you see is African American pastors, and not all of them are on the payoff. I just want to make that clear. But we have issues.
Many are,
yes. But we have, nobody wants to talk about that, though.
I do.
We have, I appreciate that. So the point I'm making, my theory now is you have to deal with the black on black hatred because young guys get into a conflict, they go from 1 to kill zone, 1 to 10 right away because they already have issues that are embedded inside of them. And this is like learned behavior. But violence does not spread like an infectious disease. That used to be my theory when I was with ceasefire with the doctor. But if violence spreads like an infectious disease, then why is it only contained to black folks killing each other? Especially in cities like Chicago, Baltimore, whatever the case may be. So we have
and
to deal
you
with
also,
that.
And would you also, right. Again, I'm going to make a statement here, and I hope it's right. And I'm sure there's people that are, well, people that will be challenging me when I say this, maybe from the NRA. There are more white people in America who have guns than black people. And yet there isn't the propensity for white on white crime right. in neighborhoods, even if they're lower economic neighborhoods. Am I right or wrong on that, Richard?
Yeah, I think you are. But I think basically what it comes down to is that hurt people, and free people, free
exactly.
people. And I think you got too many hurting people in the black community. And I think they're hurting from a whole laundry list of issues. It begins at home, and the isolation at home that they may feel, lack of a father in the household, a lack of that love that they need in the household. I think unemployment, I think poverty, I think wealth gap, all of these things are combustibles that lead to a powder keg situation. And so that's why you see the violence playing out in the black community the way that you see it and the level and the degree that you see it.
Amisha?
I think we got to deal with it.
I was gonna say, I think that we might need to start thinking a little bit deeper. It always semi makes me want to cringe when people talk about the role of single parents in regards to the level of violence in the African-American community. I grew up in a single-parent household. But beyond that, 75% of African-Americans grow up in a single-parent household today, and that number is only growing. So if that is your main precursor to knowing that somebody is going to be potentially violent, then there's a major issue there. And it's an issue that you cannot legislate. You can't make a man legally stay in the home. But on that same token, there are mothers across this nation who are single parents who have kids that aren't actively involved in anything that's demonstrative that is violent, specifically those in the South. You have a lot of African-Americans in the South that are growing up in poverty who also come from single-parent households who seemingly see no way out, but they're not out here gangbanging. They're not out here robbing people's homes. They're not out here causing riots.
What's it? Tell us more about that. That's a very important point. I mean, by the way, this, again, living in Chicago, there's so many nights when crime and shooting and death leads our news. I can't say, but again, what is the story in Kansas City and even further south? I mean, to go into, Atlanta and Birmingham and cities in the south, I mean, does that same issue...
No, this is the thing. You do have,
I want to get your reaction. That's my question, rhetorically and otherwise. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
Okay. Now, you guys...
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Back in Chicago, let me introduce our guests. Richard Boykin is here. He is a Cook County Commissioner in the 1st District in the County of Cook, City of Chicago. Teal Hardiman is here. He is a longtime anti-violence community activist. He is president of Violence Interceptors, Inc. And Amisha Cross joins us, and she is with the City Colleges of Chicago as a public relations executive. And again, you were making a very important point about the North and the South, and specifically about poverty during the break.
The American South has always had a larger percentage of poverty than the rest of the nation. And if you look at the single-parent ratio in the South in comparison to the single-parent ratio in the North, you still see pretty much the same dichotomy. But what you don't see overall is the same level of aggression from Southern cities and people who grow up with the exact same household structure and makeup and the exact same income basis as you do in Northern cities. So it's very interesting when people always use the argument that it's the single-parent households, it's the poverty, when there are places across this country that are a lot more impoverished, where people are living on a legitimate shoestring, where they're not even having the same level of social programs that they do in the North, and you see them not doing the same things. So I think that there is something else that we have to look at.
Does that include? Are you focusing exclusively on the African-American areas of the South, or are you including Appalachia as well?
I'm including the African-American areas, the rural areas, the mountainous regions. You just
Indians,
don't see it.
American Indians everywhere. What's your point? Your reaction to that, Teal?
Well, no, I agree with what Amisha is saying. You know, because the thing about it is that that's what you have going on out here down south. You have it appears you have more of a base when you're raising your kids up in the southern structure versus like an urban structure, like in a city like Chicago or Detroit. You know, places like that. But at the same time, you know, I just want to put a challenge out to your viewers. Okay. I'll be willing to guarantee you, Bruce, if you took the police off the streets in Chicago for 30 days and you took the violence preventions off the streets for 30 days, the programs, I guarantee you won't have an increase or a decrease in shootings and homicides. The same thing will happen because all of the groups are coming after somebody gets killed. The police are coming after somebody gets killed. And people may not want to hear that, but I'll be willing to guarantee you that. The answer is not more police. If you don't deal with the core issue of self-hatred in the African-American community, you are not going to reduce violence in our community.
How do you do that? Where do you start?
You have to create a curriculum for it. You got to start working with the younger kids. And the reason I came up with this theory, because I was over in Englewood doing some work, and some guys on one block, they were like 11 and 12 years old. They told me they hated the guys on the other block. I said, why you guys hate the guys on that block? They say, look, we just don't like them. My brother and them don't like them. We hate them with a passion. They hate them. So I'm saying you have to develop a curriculum that deals with self-hatred, and you might not be able to name it self-hatred. You know, you have to title it something else, but you got to get to the core issue in dealing with that. I'm telling you, you have to.
White America frequently hears about the power of the black pulpit around election time.
Yes.
What are the ministers, and you're a minister as well.
Right.
What are the ministers saying on the issue of hatred? Hatred of one African-American against another African-American because he lives two blocks away.
Look, Augustine said that we all love the truth when it enlightens us. We all hate the truth when it conflicts us. The reality of it is we got to get back to the truth.
Yes, sir.
And the truth is that we're all in this together. And we all survive together or we die together. And all of this violence that's taking place in the black community, it's not just a black issue. It's an American issue. Hmm. And I would disagree with Amisha. And I would tell you this, that there are cities in the South that are powder kegs as well, that are violent cities. In fact, a lot of the folks in the North have gone to the South because they figure that they can run game on the country folk. That's what they figured. A lot of this, though, happened in the 70s, in the 80s, in the policies on drugs, where drugs were being dumped into communities, certain communities, and where guns were being dumped into those communities as well. And these communities have not seen the level of investment that we've seen in downtown Chicago. Let me make this point, Bruce, because this is important. If you had the level of kids being killed in downtown Chicago, north side of Chicago, and affluent areas, there would be a state of emergency. There would be that declaration. They would not tolerate it. The citizens in that community would not tolerate it. We tolerate it, and it's wrong. Pastors must speak out.
I totally agree, and you know, and I referenced it at the beginning, almost the first question I asked. It has been extremely frustrating to me, having lived in Chicago with all of the epidemic of violence we have in this city that's been going on for at least 7 years, it has been extremely frustrating to me that the president did not use the bully pulpit of the presidency to come back to Chicago to speak about that issue. And to me, it was dereliction of a responsibility, not a duty, but a responsibility that Barack Obama had to come back to deal with crime in his own city. And we've seen that wherever there's big crime issues, other than maybe the beer summit, I mean, Barack Obama is AWOL. He's not there on top of it. But one of the other things that I wanted to talk about is you talked about, the difference between northern cities and southern cities. And I want to go back to a question that one of our tweet question that came in from BC, wherever he is or she is. He talked about the 50 years of Democratic policies in Baltimore, Chicago, and Detroit, cities that are bankrupt, cities that have been overwhelmingly controlled by Democrats. That hasn't been the case in the last at least 30 years in the South. So my question is, and we have some, I think probably all Democrats at the table this week, is there something to be said for that? Has the Democratic Party perpetuated a sense of either entitlement or dependency or looking the other way when you're talking about building quality schools? I mean, the Democrats have been in control, and the urban areas of this country are a mess. Is there not complicity there? Richard, and you're a Democrat.
I am a Democrat.
And you're what I really like about you is, first of all, we share passion over many of the same things. And you've always been honest and very candid. You don't say all the knee-jerk things that some guests say. And I think we have everybody on this panel tonight I would put in that same category. I mean, you began the program, if you did not hear it, basically criticizing President Obama for not going to Baltimore. So that, having said that, what's your answer to that the Democratic Party is part of the problem here?
Look, I don't think it's just the Democratic Party, but I think it's people in communities who fail to hold elected officials accountable. Ultimately, everything begins with the people. And so, you know, when you have 30% of the people participating in elections, well, elections have consequences. Look, the mayor selects who the police chief is. The police chief selects who the commanders are and captains and sergeants. I mean, that mindset flows down. Yes, leadership is important. And when you look around and you see places on the west side of Chicago or places on the south side that have not been rebuilt since the riots, that is a problem since the riots of Dr. King's death.
1968?
That is a problem. And so, you know, but people have to speak out in the community. The people must be empowered to speak out.
But should they get frustrated then? Should they get frustrated with the elected officials, because the same constituency, African Americans, the most loyal constituency to the Democratic Party, they keep voting for Democrats. They think, you know, they think they're going to get a better answer. They don't get a better answer. It's just like Elijah Cummings, you know, for 30 plus years representing Baltimore. He's on TV today. Right. I mean, he's got to have some, he's part of the problem because he hasn't resolved. He hasn't brought things back to deliver the bacon for the people in his constituency. And certainly, you know, with the exception of the most recent governor, Governor Hogan, I mean, Maryland has been one of the most secure Democratic seats for the last 50 years.
Well, there was a poll that was just taken in USA Today where it states that the majority of people in America are pretty much disappointed in Democrats and Republicans. So I think it's both ways. And I'm more of a Democrat slash independent minded individual due to the fact that we know that the Democratic Party, we've had some problems here in Illinois. That's why Quinn lost the election, because Rhino was able to feed the people the stories that the Democrats have failed Illinois. You had 500,000 homes in foreclosure.
But the problem's not only in this city, but
across the United States.
When you prop up a school system that is not a success,
right,
when you prop it up and you keep graduating people that have not earned their degrees, then you are not, and you stand up against, whether it's charter schools or vouchers. I mean, you're hurting the constituency.
Misha.
I'm glad that you touched on the education point. Being in executive leadership at City College is one of the things that we grapple with on a daily basis, is the fact that the majority of our students come from Chicago public schools. These are students who are graduates of CPS. Mm-hmm. These students come in testing at the fifth or sixth grade level. Wow. There is absolutely no way, even if they were given out jobs for free, these people would be ready for those jobs within 2 years. Mm-hmm. It is significantly difficult to raise somebody's education level from the fifth or sixth grade when they are an adult. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that we really have to take into consideration. It doesn't matter what side of the city they live on. CPS has continually failed students, and these are largely minority students.
Well, then we failed them, and basically that goes back to leadership. Chicago Public Schools does not have an elected school board. Exactly. The mayor drives the policy at Chicago Public Schools through his appointed board. And so when we fail people, and Bruce, we set them up, they become angry. Look, when you pass somebody through social promotion on and they have not mastered the basic skills, when they get to a job interview and you tell them to fill out a job application online, or in, and
that's
they
why
can't
it goes,
it.
It goes back to the lack of education. And again, in these major urban areas, they've been controlled by Democrats. They've been controlled by the teachers' unions, who have not done a good job in preparing their students for the world. And again, they will argue, rightfully so, they are only dealing with students who've been sent from homes where there is poverty, there is one parent, all the things you just talked about, and they throw up their hands and say, listen, we're doing the best job we can, but the real problem is with the parents. You know what? And the teachers are not wrong about saying that. Back shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a four-diamond hotel experience with a convenient location?
It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Richard Boykin, Commissioner, you have introduced some legislation in the county board. One piece is to prohibit the chokehold to be used by police officers. What is it, and why do you want to prohibit it?
Well, look, the case of Eric Garner in New York, he was choked to death by police, police that weren't held accountable, weren't brought up on charges. We said that people shouldn't be choked. And, you know, in our county system, the hospital police years ago, actually, there was a lawsuit filed. We settled it of an individual who was choked to death. And so we want to prohibit that. And I'm proud to say that the Cook County Board was the first entity of government in the state of Illinois to actually pass an ordinance to actually prohibit the use of chokeholds.
Do you think that every police officer knows that?
I think that the word will get down to everybody because the state of Illinois in Springfield, there are three bills, I think, pending to prohibit chokeholds across the state.
Because, you know, the situation in Baltimore with the seat belts had recently been had only recently been passed. I mean, so it's possible that those police officers were not aware. They may not have read all of their memos. I mean, again, common sense would say that you'd strap someone in, but right. If that wasn't the standard operating procedure, it's a relatively new thing. Now, the other thing we talked about is stop and frisk. You believe that one of the reasons why so many African Americans have an unpleasant or a hatred or a mistrust of police officers is they've all been hassled in some way through stop and frisk. They're standing on a street corner. The cops roll up. Everybody's hands have got to go up against the wall. They get frisked, and some people are taken away, and some people, they hold a grudge for the rest of their lives. Were you ever the victim of stop and frisk?
I've never been that victim, but I've seen a number of people
you,
who I grew up
no,
with.
No, I haven't been a victim, but I've seen it. I see it every day on the west side of Chicago.
And you want to stop that. What would be the result if stop and frisk stopped in Chicago?
Well, we introduced a resolution to simply applaud the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, for their report. And they actually laid out some recommendations. We asked the city of Chicago to take a look at the recommendations and actually adopt them. One of them was providing for transparency. In other words, every person that you stop, you write that down and you give the person a receipt. Let them know why you stopped them, who stopped them, when you stopped them, so that it could be a record. And it's all basically transparency type things and record keeping. I can't understand why we wouldn't want to do that. I think that these stop and frisk actually dehumanizes individuals, and it takes away one's dignity.
So, but if you're going to give someone a ticket for that.
Well, not a ticket, but, you know, just a receipt letting them know that they've been stopped.
What happens if some 18-year-old guy's got 20 of them? I mean, isn't his self-esteem going to go down?
Well, if he's got 20 of them, then you know that something's going on there, that there's a pattern and practice of these type of stops in that area. The district in District 11 in my community, in my district, in my area, had the highest number of police stops of that 250,000. That's why I'm very much concerned
about
it.
But you also, again, for those listening around the country, you come from a congressional district. The congressman is Danny Davis. You were once his chief of staff. That congressional district has more ex-offenders than any congressional district in the United States.
Right. Yes.
So if you are a police officer policing that area and you were looking for people that perhaps might have committed a crime, knowing that the recidivist rate, if you're coming through a state prison, is way, way too high in this United States. We would all agree on that. It's not bad policing if you see a group of people on the street. One of them might be someone who has committed a crime.
Let me say
but you can't you can't just do that. Let me, let me respond, Tio. Would you let me respond?
Okay. Go ahead,
first of all, Bruce, let me just be real. You can't do that. Exactly. That's violative of the Constitution of the United States. The city settled $54 million in terms of police misconduct lawsuits last year. City of Chicago, $54 million. That's money that could have been in the hands of and a jobs program that they could have put on the in the summer jobs
schools.
Program. They could have put it in the schools. Either way, you're paying it out because of police misconduct. The stop and frisk is the first opportunity for police misconduct and escalation of something that could lead to something deadly. And so when you see a group of guys, just because you think that somehow they come from an area that may be menacing, you can't just go up and without any articulable facts, reasonable suspicion that they've committed a crime or that a crime is about to be committed.
Deal and then omission.
I just have a quick answer. The numbers don't add up. Homicides are up, even though all the stop and frisk has been going on. See, if the numbers don't add up, it doesn't make any sense. Back again, you have to look up Professor David Kennedy out of John Jay College. He has a Kennedy approach, and you got to look at George Kelly. And that's what this policing is all about. That's why there's so many missteps in the African-American community right now.
In Baltimore and in cities across the United States, a justification for reasonable cause is the amount of crimes and violence that is committed within that community.
But that's not a justification based on Terry v. Ohio, the Supreme Court case that actually determines when you can stop somebody legally. Reasonable suspicion is what you must have, that a crime is about to be committed or that they have committed a crime. Any other thing is wrong, and people need to understand that, and they can file a lawsuit because that's harassment.
Will, I need a quick answer from everybody. Do you believe that the demonstrations in Baltimore and perhaps other cities will continue, or is this going to fade away after a couple of weeks?
Demonstrations will continue because the movement has taken on a life of its own.
Amisha.
The demonstrations will continue.
The demonstrations will continue as long as we have the level of inequities that we have in our society.
On that note, our thanks to Richard Boykin and Amisha Cross and Tio Hardiman. We thank you all for being with us. This was, I think, a remarkable discussion for the last couple of hours. I hope everybody out there in radio and TV land enjoyed it as much as I did. I thought we touched on a lot of very important issues, and we've only scratched the surface. We'll invite this group back again to continue our conversation in a few weeks. This program is a Genevieve production, produced and associated with WCGO, 1590 AM. Our thanks to Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman and Fritz Goldman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for the new Wild Travels series Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.